Evangelista Sivakti Vidanga Samara Shubhova
Kijai.
Dayam Vishnu Bhad Vanamahansa Vajika Charges Go to the Sara Shishi Mahas to Vangresha the Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Dakur Maharaj Shubhova Kijai. Ananta Kodi Vaishnava Rinda Gija, ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Gija, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Gija, Prem Sakaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Gadara Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Rinda Gija, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopinath Sham Kundarara Kundi Gita Govardhan Gija, Sri Sri Vrindavan Dham Gija, Sri Sri Navritam Gija, Sri Sri Mayapuram Gija, Sri Sri Mathuradam Gija, Sri Sri Jagannath Puridam Gija, Tulasi Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Gangamaya ki jai, Punamaya ki jai, Gaur Premanandi, Parinama Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Brihat Madanga ki jai, Stanal Prasadam Distribution ki jai, Sri Sri Gornitai ki jai, Berlin Jatra ki jai, Shamavita Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, all glories to the Assembly. All glories to the Assembly. All glories to the Assembly. All glories to Sri Sri Guru. So we're reading from Bhagavad Gita, as it is. Translations and purports by Srila Prabhupada, chapter number 7, text number 14.
Maya Duratyaya
Maya Duratyaya
Mami Vaye
prapadyante.
Ame bhaye prapadyante.
Mayam etam tarantite.
Mayam etam tarantite.
Daviyesha
gunamani.
Mahamaya
durajaya.
Mahamaya
durajaya.
Daivyesha gunamayi.
Daivyesha gunamayi.
Mamaya durajaya.
Mamaya durajaya.
Mamevaye prabhajyante.
Mamevaye prabhajyante.
Mayam etam tarantite.
Mayam etam tarantite.
Daivyesha gunamayi.
Daivyesha gunamayi.
Mamaya durajaya.
Mamaya durajaya. Mahamaya prabhajyante.
Mayam etam tarantite.
Mayam etam tarantite.
Please.
Daivyesha gunamayi.
Daivyesha gunamayi.
Mahamaya durajaya.
Mahamaya durajaya.
Mahamaya prabhajyante.
Mahamaya prabhajyante.
Mayam etam tarantite.
Mayam etam tarantite. Daivyesha gunamayi. Mahamaya durajaya. Mamevaye prabhajyante. Mayam etam tarantite. Daivyesha gunamayi. Mahamaya durajaya. Mamevaye prabhajyante. Mayam etam tarantite. Daivyesha gunamayi. Mahamaya durajaya. Mamevaye prabhajyante. Mayam etam tarantite. Daivyesha gunamayi. Mahamaya durajaya. Mamevaye prabhajyante. Mayam etam tarantite.
Daivi.
Daivi.
Transcendental.
Transcendental.
He. Certainly.
Certainly.
Esha.
Esha.
This.
This.
Gunamayi.
Gunamayi.
Consisting of the three modes of material nature.
Consisting of three modes of material nature.
Mama.
Mama.
My.
My.
Maya.
Maya.
Energy.
Energy.
Diratyaya.
Diratyaya.
Very difficult to overcome.
Very difficult to overcome.
Mam.
Mam.
Unto me.
Unto me.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Yea.
Those.
Those.
Who. Upadyante.
Upadyante.
Surrender.
Surrender.
Mayam etam.
Mayam etam.
This illusory energy.
This illusory energy.
Taranti.
Taranti.
Overcome.
Overcome.
Te.
Te.
They.
They.
This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. That was the translation. Now the purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has innumerable energies, and all these energies are divine. Although the living entities are part of his energies and are therefore divine, due to contact with material energy, their original superior power is covered. Being thus covered by material energy, one cannot possibly overcome its influence. As previously stated, both the material and spiritual natures, being emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are eternal. The living entities belong to the eternal superior nature of the Lord, but due to contamination by the inferior nature, matter, their illusion is also eternal. The conditioned soul is therefore called Nitya Badha, or eternally conditioned. No one can trace out the history of his becoming conditioned at a certain date in material history. Consequently, his release from the clutches of material nature is very difficult, even though that material nature is an inferior energy. Because material energy is ultimately conducted by the Supreme Will, which the living entity cannot overcome. I'll read that again. Consequently, his release from the clutches of material nature is very difficult, even though that material nature is an inferior energy. Because material nature is ultimately conducted by the Supreme Will, which the living entity cannot overcome. Inferior material nature is defined herein as divine nature due to its divine connection and movement by the divine will. Being conducted by divine will, material nature, although inferior, acts so wonderfully in the construction and destruction of the cosmic manifestations. The Vedas confirm this as follows. Mayam tu prakritim vidyan mayinam tu maheshwaram. Although maya, illusion, is false or temporary, the background of maya is the supreme magician, the personality of Godhead, who is Maheshwara, the supreme controller, of Shetasvara Upanishad 4.10. Another meaning of guna is rope. It is to be understood that the conditioned soul is tightly tied by the ropes of illusion. A man bound by the hands and feet cannot free himself. He must be helped by a person who is unbound. Because the bound cannot help the bound, the rescuer must be liberated. Therefore, only Lord Krishna or his bona fide representative, the spiritual master, can release the conditioned soul. Without such superior help, one cannot be freed from the bondage of material nature. Devotional service, or Krishna consciousness, can help one gain such release. Krishna, being the Lord of illusory energy, can order this insurmountable energy to release the conditioned soul. He orders this release out of his causeless mercy on the surrendered soul and out of his paternal affection for the living entity, who is originally a beloved son of the Lord. Therefore, surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord is the only means to get free from the clutches of the stringent material nature. The words Mam Eva are also significant. Mam means unto Krishna, Vishnu only, and not Brahma or Shiva. Although Brahma and Shiva are greatly elevated and are almost on the level of Vishnu, it is not possible for such incarnations of Rajaguna, passion, and Tamaguna, ignorance, to release the conditioned soul from the clutches of Maya. In other words, both Brahma and Shiva are also under the influence of Maya. Only Vishnu is the master of Maya. Therefore, he alone can give release to the conditioned soul. The Vedas, Svetashvatara Upanishad 3.8, confirm this in the phrase Tam Eva Viditva, or freedom is possible only by understanding Krishna. Even Lord Shiva affirms that liberation can be achieved only by the mercy of Vishnu. Lord Shiva says, Mukti Pradata Sarvesham Vishnur Eva Nasamshaya. There is no doubt that Vishnu is the deliverer of liberation for everyone. Om magena kivinam dasya ganam janam tulakaya chaksura militam jena tasmai shri gurave namah sri chaitana manovistam stapitam jena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam tadati svapadantikam. This verse is very important because it reminds us of the eternal principle that one cannot become free from this material nature unless one surrenders to Krishna. In fact, the material nature is described here as being durakyaya, that it is insurmountable. One cannot overcome it. Many attempts are made to become liberated from this material energy. In the material field, people sometimes try to give up their lives by committing suicide, or they try to go away from civilization and live in the forest. Or they try to absorb themselves in some sort of meditative practice, which is material. Or they try to absorb themselves in their work, or they try to become successful in some particular field, to be the number one, first class, best person in science, politics, art, philosophy, mathematics, some way. But this, that doesn't actually bring liberation. And spiritually also, people endeavor in many misguided ways to overcome the material energy. For every genuine spiritual person, there are 1,000 charlatans. For every genuine person who can liberate us, there are 1,000 charlatans. So Prabhupada mentions here that one cannot be taken out of bondage. The bound cannot undo the bound. If one is bound, one has to encounter someone who is unbound. So such persons are extremely rare. One is very fortunate to encounter one who is not bound. Ramanda, what is it? Ramanda Banyate, Konya Bhagyavanji, Guru Krishna Prasade, Pai Lata Bhakti, Bhakti Vij, Pai Bhakti Lata Vij. That means, Ramanda Bhumite, Konya Bhagyavanji, Guru Krishna Prasade, Pai Bhakti Lata Vij. One is extremely fortunate if one, after traveling, as the conditioned soul does, through many different situations and different places in the universe, Ramanda Bhumite, Konya Bhagyavanji, one is very fortunate if one can meet someone who is unbound, a spiritual master, who can give the essence of devotional service, at which time the Bhakti Lata Beach, the seed of devotional service, the creeper of devotional service, begins. So this is our good fortune, that we have encountered a spiritual master. We have seen the way out of material existence. Also in the spiritual field, people attempt many different mistaken forms of meditation, or even different forms of worship in different religions. Generally, people in the Vedic tradition, they worship the unmanifest, avyakta, or the impersonal manifestation of God. So everywhere, people are bound. Even though that the people who live according to Vedic culture in India, they're much more advanced than we are in these Western countries, so they are also misguided by people who think that the ultimate is the impersonal. And they try to develop that system of liberation. But that's incomplete. There's a famous verse in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, beginning Nyenye, which says that you cannot actually gain liberation. You cannot gain freedom by meditating on the impersonal aspect of God or Krishna. So whether in the material or the spiritual field, the influence of the three modes of nature is so strong that one is bound by material nature. So Prabhupada is raising the point and the purport that we are all spiritual by nature. Krishna says, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava Matak. I am the beginning, I am the origin of everything. Matak Sarva Pravartate, material and spiritual. So ultimately, we are spiritual. But we're covered. If a small spark is covered by a blanket, it becomes extinguished and it loses its power because it's not getting proper oxygen. So similarly, our spirit soul, which is so powerful that it can drive our body to the end of its birth and then start another body again, so powerful. But still, Maya is so powerful that when this blanket of Maya covers our soul, it loses its freedom, just like a spark is cut off by losing its oxygen. So the power of Maya is always so strong that even the great sages, even the great self-realized persons, are praying that they will not be overcome. And there are many instances in the history of Vedic thought and incidences and anecdotes in the Srimad Bhagavatam where great, highly elevated souls who are actually developing love for Krishna become victimized by Maya, Bharat Maharaj is one example, a great soul. But because he was a good and kind person, he tried to protect a small animal, a deer, when its mother died, and then he became attached. And at the time of death, he died rather suddenly. He was victimized by affectionately thinking of this animal. So one can become a victim even of affection, a victim even of affection. Now Prabhupada is also quoting here Lord Shiva, saying that it is only by worship of Krishna that one can be liberated. And the example is also given there in the incident in the Srimad Bhagavatam where Lord Shiva becomes victimized by Krishna in his beautiful form of Mohini Murti. He appears to become victimized anyway. And as he is apparently in illusion, running after this beautiful feminine form of Krishna, Krishna in this form led him in front of many great sages meditating in their hermitages. And they saw what was apparently Lord Shiva, who was running lustily after this beautiful woman. And they began to think, what am I doing? Who am I? How am I safe here, meditating and practicing my worship, when even Lord Shiva appears to be victimized? Of course, this was an eternal relationship, internal pastime with Krishna and Lord Shiva. He wasn't actually being victimized, but he appeared that way, so that others could be instructed. And other great souls, even the Mahajans, like Prahlad Maharaj, states that he's fearful of the material energy. It's so powerful. And there was one instance here also in Berlin. When the first temple started, there was one devotee, American devotee, named Shivananda. Maybe you know the story. He was sitting in the room with Prabhupada, and he said, Prabhupada, please give me your blessing. Is there anything I can do for you, Prabhupada? Is there anything I can do? This was in 1969. And Prabhupada said to him, he said, just pray for me that I will never fall into Maya. Pray that I will never fall into Maya. Of course, we know that Prabhupada was a Mahabhagavata, he could not fall into Maya. But in order to instruct his disciple, and out of his own feeling of humility also, he made this comment. Now, there are many types of meditation where people have to stare at a dot or close their eyes and think of a light or the void. And there are many types of worship where people go into temples and they have deities and they worship them. But in these instances, love in the heart does not actually develop. And Prabhupada speaks here of affection flowing from Krishna. Love does not develop in the heart because it requires developing a personal relationship with Krishna. Then the love can flow. Krishna is a fountainhead of affection for all living entities. And as Prabhupada mentions here, we're all part of Krishna. Mame Vamso Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. And as Krishna claims earlier in this chapter, he says, O son of Prita, I am the seed of all original seed of all existences, Bijamam Sarva Bhutana. And he also states in the 14th chapter that he is the father, Aham Bija Pradapita, the father of all living beings. Fathers must by nature have affection for their children. So Krishna's affection is very great, greater than we can imagine, greater than any affection that we can feel, because Krishna is the fountainhead of all affection. And this affection is constantly flowing down to the living entities. Just like the sun, it's always beaming down its light and heat, but we don't always feel it. Sometimes we may be covered by a cloud, or we may be inside of a building, we may be underground. But that those rays are always coming. So it's just a matter of being able to receive. It's just a matter of fixing our consciousness so that we can actually receive that love that's coming from Krishna. And when one develops love for Krishna, one develops love for all living entities, all beings, not just human beings, but all beings, plants, animals, insects, birds, beasts, fish. That love is there. So, we are all spiritual, that's the point. But we've completely forgotten it. And the whole process of developing Krishna consciousness is to awaken ourselves and to awaken others. Material existence is like a dream. It's like a sleep. And the sound of the Hare Krishna mantra is like our alarm clock. It wakes us up to the higher reality of life. And the purpose of devotional service or preaching devotional service is to wake up the whole world, which is sleeping. And in sleep is very dangerous because anyone can attack us in our sleep and we won't be ready. We won't be noticing it. So it's a very dangerous condition for everyone. It's like being asleep and tied up in a bed. Gunas are also called ropes. It's like being tied up. So the devotee's mercy, which is Krishna's mercy flowing through the devotee, is to wake them up out of this slumber. It's a very dangerous slumber. It's actually very dangerous to live in the material world because we're asleep and we don't know how dangerous it is. Sometimes when people are asleep, there's a flood or earthquake or a fire and they don't know, and then they die. So similarly, if we're in this slumber of material existence, so many things can happen to us. So it's the duty of a devotee, because of affection for the other living entities, to wake everybody up to a higher consciousness, to reality. Prabhupada makes a very important statement here. He says, the conditioned soul is therefore called nityabhata, or eternally conditioned. No one can trace out the history of his becoming conditioned at a certain date in material history. We're called nityabhata because we have been conditioned for so long, so many lifetimes, that it's like eternity. In primitive cultures, sometimes people, they can't count beyond 1, 2, 3, 4. And every number above 4 or 5 is infinity to such a person. So our memories are so short that we remember nothing of our past lives. And even if we had a limited time in this material world, it still covers millions of years. So therefore we're called eternally conditioned. It's so long, we can't imagine how long it is. It's beyond our conception how long we've been conditioned. So the term nityabhata is used, eternally conditioned. So it's very difficult to wake someone up from this condition. And Maya is described here in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad as the supreme magician, Mayam tu prakritim vidyam mayinam tu maheshwaram. How can it be that Maya is such a great magician? Well, one way we can understand how intelligent Maya is, if we're at all skeptical about Maya's power, is to look at the force which keeps the living beings in the material world. The force which keeps the living beings, at least the human beings, all beings, but especially human beings, is desire, sex desire between man and woman. It's so powerful. But actually, when one is awakened to spiritual consciousness and sees the physical body for what it really is, then one is more intelligent than Maya. But it's very difficult because Maya has packaged these material bodies so nicely. When we go into a market, we go in to buy one item, like some milk, but then we see something that's very attractively packaged, some butter, maybe some yogurt, whatever, and we become enamored with it. We become mesmerized, hypnotized. That's magic. And then we buy it. We didn't want to buy it, but we bought it. Why? Because it's packaged. So maybe it doesn't even taste good. We don't know. So Maya has packaged these material bodies with skin. It's a very thin layer, the skin. If you weigh the skin on the body, it's maybe 1/100th of the whole body weight. It's a very little thin covering. If that little covering of Maya is stripped away, that little thin membrane of skin is taken off of a beautiful body, the most attractive body. It's so revolting that you can't even look at it. You can't even think about it. It's so revolting. But Maya is so intelligent that this little tiny layer keeps all of the conditioned beings living in this material world forgetful completely about their original existence. And year after year, getting older and older and older, still being attached to the material world. We heard Prabhupada say once that the old men go into the nightclubs, especially in Paris. They're known for this. They go when they're 70, 80 years old. They're completely impotent sexually. They're impotent. But they go and they pay lots of money so they can dance with the young girls, and they make business out of this. They go and they dance because their minds are still attached, even though they are physically incapable of anything. Their minds are still attached to the beautiful forms that Maya has created, even in their mind. So this actually continues right up to the point of death. And even though people think that I won't be bound at the time of death. Sometimes people that are brought up in the Vedic culture, they think when I get old, then I'll go to the Himalayas. I'll go. I'll take the pilgrimage, and then I'll be liberated. But the desire for sense gratification remains. It always remains, unless one can surrender. It stays in the heart. Rasa varjam rasopyasya param vishrami vartate. It stays within the mind. There's the famous story of King, was it Akbar or Ashok? I think it was Akbar, King Akbar. It was King Akbar, whose minister was very confidential, and Akbar was a very philosophical fellow. And he said one day, how long does this sex desire remain in the mind of a human being? And he said, oh, it will remain with you right up until the very moment you die. He says, oh, I don't believe that's not possible. So the minister let it slide. He let the matter drop. So some years later, the minister came in a hurry to the king and he said, come with me immediately. I want to show you something. So he was always obedient to his minister's urgent moods. He said, let us go, and I want you to bring your youngest daughter as well. His young daughter was also very beautiful. So they were walking, and he said, now we're going to enter this house, and you'll see a man who is about to die. He's on his deathbed. So I want you to notice his eyes and note what he sees from the moment we go in till the moment we leave. So they went in, and they paid a visit. They offered their final respects, and they left. So they were silent as they were walking back, and then suddenly the king turned to his minister and said, now I believe what you told me many years ago, how sex stays in the mind up to the moment of death, because from the moment we entered that room, that man's eyes never left my daughter's face. From the moment we entered to the moment we left the room. So Maya is very intelligent. The old man was about to die. He could barely talk or see anything, but he was simply staring at the beautiful 16-year-old girl. His mind was so taken, carried away by the beauty of Maya. So, Prabhupada then talks about how we must approach a liberated person in order to get liberated. Approaching the wrong person is like grasping, we read in the Vedas, the tail of a dog to cross the ocean. It's not possible. But Maya is putting out so many hands, so many tails of dogs, so many ways that we can be satisfied, we can be happy without surrendering. And ultimately, even in devotional service, Maya will try to lure us into something else. Maya will try to take us away into the material world. When Prabhupada came to San Francisco in 1967, we brought him to this big rock dance, rock dance. Some of you might have read about it. So it was a very wonderful experience. Everybody chanted, and all the rock bands were playing. And Prabhupada liked it very much. But one thing happened that Prabhupada didn't like. He liked it in general, but one thing happened he didn't like. The boy he had traveled with from New York to San Francisco didn't come back that night with Prabhupada after the performance. He stayed there and danced with the girls to the rock band. So it was a wonderful spiritual experience to see thousands of people chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and Prabhupada there and so many people getting spiritually elevated. But even in devotional service, sometimes Maya will come in, will creep in and bewilder us. Therefore, devotional service, it has to be completely free of even a little bit of contamination. It has to be a vaitaki apratiyata. It has to be without any motivation and continuous. One of the six symptoms of surrender mentioned in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Sharanagati is that one should always have one's desires the same as Krishna's desires. Another way we can measure surrender is if we're constantly thinking of Krishna. Krishna says, "Man manabhava mad bhakto." So one way to think of Krishna all the time is to know what Krishna wants and to act according to those desires. Actually, the specific point in the Sharanagati is that one should have no desires other than Krishna's desires. That's one of the most important steps in surrendering. What does Krishna want? What does Krishna want me to do? We find this out through the spiritual master, through the Shastra, through Vaishnavas, through great saintly persons by studying. But we can find out, what does Krishna want me to do? We have a link to Krishna. When I know what Krishna wants me to do, and I do that thing, that is surrender. When one follows the instructions of the spiritual master, like Prabhupada, he was saying many times, people praise me, but I have done nothing. The only thing I can get any credit for is that I've carried out the order of my spiritual master. In other words, he did what Krishna wanted him to do. And he was recounting once in 1976 how difficult it was when he came to America. He called it a checkered history. Checkered, you know what that means? Checkered history? It was black and white. There was a lot of difficulties. Sometimes it was good, but there were many difficult things that happened to him. He said it was a very checkered history. So for a year or 2 years, he found it as a great struggle. But because he knew this is what Krishna wants me to do, that was the surrender. And everything was against him. The city he went to was the most sinful city, one of the most sinful cities in the world. He had no money, had no friends. Nobody was apparently interested. He got no help from India, where he came from, where so many people were Krishna conscious or some kind of Krishna conscious. Nobody helped. But he just did the thing that his spiritual master told him to do. Just start Krishna consciousness in the English-speaking world, the English language in the English-speaking world. So he stayed. And then quite miraculously, miraculous meaning that Krishna was directly involved, this material energy that was so strong began to recede into the background. And people came forward. Devotees came forward. Souls came forward to help Prabhupada. So to overcome this material energy, it's a completely spiritual process. There's no material solution to any material problem. Only spiritual solutions. Actually, Krishna consciousness solves every problem, material and spiritual. It solves the economic problem. It solves the political problem. It solves the pollution problem. It solves the hunger problem. It solves the psychological distress problem. It solves the conflict between races, the conflict between nations. It solves that problem. It solves the problem of oppression. It solves the problem of drugs. It solves the problem of war and terrorism. It solves the problem of being diseased. Of course, we can't conquer disease, but Krishna consciousness brings people to a healthy condition because of the way it structures our lives. We rise early, we bathe a lot, we eat good food, offered to Krishna, pure, healthy. So this Maya is completely, it's hopeless to try to cure it. In fact, as Prahlad Maharaj says, the more we try to solve the problem of Maya, or the delusion, the things that cause us trouble, the more problems we create. We've got these wonderful Autobots here. But more people... As we look at the people who want to clean up the environment. Sometimes we look at the people who want to clean up the environment. They're saying, okay, we're going to clean up the pollution. And why is there so much waste? Why is there so much dirt? Why is there so much acid rain? So much plastic, so much paper, we can't get rid of it. So the solution is, let's start killing people. Let's start killing them before they're even born. So 3 days ago they passed a law in Germany that now anybody can kill their child. Anybody, they can just do it if they want to. If they're stressed financially, that's the reason. If it's going to be a hardship on my financial situation, then I have the legal right to kill my baby. And the people who want the clean world, the environmentalists, they're supporting this. Yes, we'll have a cleaner world because there's overpopulation. So imagine what kind of a problem that's creating, what kind of karma that's going to bring. That's a big problem. That brings problems to the people individually. They have to themselves go and get aborted in the womb. And then what to speak of the whole country, the bad karma, the collective karma that it's creating. It's bringing us closer to destruction by war and pestilence and famine and so many other things. Or people want to solve other problems of life. They want to stop the drug problem. In America, they had a budget $7 billion. $7 billion. That's $700 million. No, seven. What is it? $1,000 million. $7,000 million. And it's not stopping drugs. It's taking money away. That's all it's doing. It's taking money. It's not stopping. So $7 billion is a lot of money. It's a big problem. Think what we could do with $7 billion to spread Krishna consciousness. With even $1 billion, think of all the good that could be done. So this is creating more problems. It's making the budget unbalanced. And the people that want to protect the animals, the poor animals, they want to cure this problem of the animals being slaughtered and so on. But many of them are also killing their own children because they're so confused. So the whole material world is like this. And Prabhupada, remember on that record where he says, on the album he says, people are trying very hard to exploit the resources of material nature, but they are becoming more and more entangled in our complexities. And the more they try, the more they create difficulties. So even if people want to do good things, if they try to do good things, their mode of goodness is still creating more problems. They want a cleaner world. And the people who are against abortion, I don't like abortion, it's wrong, it's killing babies. They're eating meat. Almost all of them are eating meat. Most of them are eating meat. So it doesn't make any sense, does it, really? They're trying to do something, but they're just getting more and more entangled in karma. They're trying to do some good. So this is the problem of life. And the Battle of Kurukshetra also was a very big problem for Arjuna anyway. It was very complicated. He didn't want to kill. And he had to offer respects to Dronacharya before the war. So he fired an arrow and the arrow landed in front of Dronacharya's feet. That was his obeisances. And then Dronacharya fired an arrow back at Arjuna, touched his head, just barely touched his head. Yes, I'm giving you my blessings. Now what were those blessings? Prabhupada said, the blessings are, I'm your guru, now you can kill me. So the point was that it's very complicated in this material world. And it wasn't until the whole Bhagavad Gita was explained to Arjuna that anything made any sense to him. How, you know, we can engage in a war. It's so bad to think of fighting in a war. It creates so many problems. And he was saying, it creates a big problem. So it's like a knot. You know, these gunas, they're ropes. They're like, gunas are like ropes. It's a knot. So sometimes it's just called a hard knot of materialism. It's very difficult. You can't pull a knot apart. But with one swoop by surrender, this knot is cut, just like with a knife. And one becomes liberated or becomes free. So liberation, real liberation, is only possible when we develop devotional service because it requires love. It requires us to fulfill our innermost desire, and that is to love, to have a perfect relationship. This is what everyone wants maybe not everyone admits, but this is actually what we want, because it's our original position. Mame Vamso Jiva Loke Jiva Buddha Sanatana. When we're children, we love our parents. When we're a little bit older, we love our friends, girlfriends, boyfriends, husband, wife, children. Everyone wants that perfect relationship. So nothing else will actually satisfy. Even one who's liberated in this material nirvana or Brahmajyoti, or even in the spiritual realm of Brahmajyoti, returns, because that loving sense of deep love for the Supreme Personality is not there. So the point is, if we do what Krishna wants, then that love will develop. Love will develop when we're performing active works of devotion, when we're acting for the loved one. I can say I love my child, but if I don't feed him, he'll starve and die. That's a perverted form of love. Or I love my husband or my wife, but they kill each other. They really thought I loved her, I loved him, but people think like this sometimes, because it's perverted. It's very perverted. I love my son, I love my daughter, and they abuse their children sometimes. But they come to the court and they say, but I love my child, I love my child. So this is perversion. So to say I love God, which so many people do, I'm going to go to heaven because I love God. I can do anything I want. I can sin all I want. But I love God, so I'll go to heaven. That's how cheap religion has become in Kali Yuga. So surrender means to do things for Krishna, to do things for God. Then that's real love. It's not perverted love. Perverted love is, like I mentioned, but love is when we're actually doing something or giving. And when we give everything to Krishna, we get everything in return. In the material world, if we give everything, we get exploited. Because one of the tendencies, one of the facts of material life is cheating. Everyone's trying to cheat everybody else. So I give myself to someone, the tendency will be I'll get cheated. Maybe not completely, but partly. Because it's based on exploitation. I give only because I want something back. That contamination is there. Even if I say I'm going to give everything, in my mind I'm expecting to get something back. So pure love for Krishna is the only answer to getting out of this entanglement. It has to be so intense that nothing in this material world can attract me. When we take initiation, we recite how we're coming from a pure, we may be coming from a pure or an impure situation. But when we are able to focus our minds on the beautiful lotus-eyed face of the Lord, we will pass through all these situations and come to spiritual perfection. Apitrava, apitrava. Sarvavastam gatopiva, yat smare pundavikaksham, sabayavyantara, shuchi. We become pure. So when we surrender, Maya, however strong Maya is, Maya is kept in recession. In Kali Yuga, we can stay surrendered by reciting Krishna's name constantly, non-stop. And Maya will retreat. Maya will keep distance. So, there's the other verse from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad confirming the phrase Tameva Viditva. Freedom is possible only by understanding Krishna. Lord Shiva affirms this. The Vishnu Purana, Lord Shiva also says that worshipping of Vishnu or Krishna is the highest form of worship. So we'll stop there. This divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. questions or points of interest?
Krishna, when you appeared 5,000 years ago, when you lived this poet's appearance since 1108 in Bharata, so is there any reason why nobody has saw him simultaneously, all of them, at once, or a hundred of Krishna's attempts?
Well, Narada Muni did. He visited because he wanted to know, how is it possible? He became a little inquisitive, a little doubtful, we might say. So he went, and this was the proof. He went from one palace to another, and in one palace he saw Krishna playing with his children. Another palace he saw Krishna walking with his wife. Another palace he saw Krishna braiding his wife's hair. Another palace he saw Krishna sleeping. Another palace he saw Krishna engaged in recreation. So it was. A yogi can manifest himself in 8 or 9 different places simultaneously. They have a yogic power that they can do this by entering water, and they can appear in different places far away. But this is not the same, because they're it's like a mirror image. They're doing the same thing in every place, and they can only do it temporarily. And it's a very minor accomplishment compared to what Krishna did. Krishna sustained this situation for many years. He had tens of thousands of grandchildren through all these wives, and he maintained these big palaces, and he was never absent from any one of them. He was simultaneously in every one. This is what God is. I mean, this is, if people are not sure about what God is, then they should think, who can marry 16,000 wives and be with each one of them simultaneously all the time in 16,000 beautiful palaces and have thousands and thousands of children. This is God. That's what God is. If there's any doubt, you think God is an old man sitting on a chair and a cloud with a big beard, which a lot of people do. Krishna's always enjoying. He doesn't even take the time to pass judgment on the sinners. He lets Yamaraj do that. He's not keeping an account book. He's just enjoying playing his flute, sporting and dancing with his devotees.
Sometimes when we mention that we have lived in millions of years in the material world, they say, no, I not live millions and millions in the material world. I come from, and maybe I'm very new soul in the material world. So this is my second life or my third life. But I'm not millions and millions of years. That's what we can say is more.
Actually, nobody knows. So everybody says something a little different. Some atheistic philosophy is that my whole existence comes into being at the time of my birth, and then it disappears at the time of my death, and that's the beginning and the end of everything. And there are, and that's the materialist one philosophy. So, therefore, since time is very short, I should try to do as much as I can. Chaivaka Muni's philosophy was that we should somehow just live very opulently and eat as much ghee as possible. Right? You know that. You have to steal it, buy it, make it, borrow it. So people have no idea. That's the problem. Someone might think I have 3 lives. Someone might think I have 10 lives. Others think I was a great king or queen in my past life. Nobody actually knows. And the proof is that they're afraid to die. Even if someone says, I know that I'm going to die, so I don't worry about it. I don't think about it. Because it's all going to end. I know that. I just accept it and I live by that. But as soon as you point a gun at it, they become very afraid. So the point is that the world is teeming with ignorance. People don't know. So they have to be a little bit willing. And it's our realization that will teach us, or give us, Krishna will give us some realization how to approach different people. If someone thinks that I may have two or three lives, you can say this is the complete knowledge of this transmigration. You have to get it from me. This is the oldest, most complete Rajavija Rajaguya Pavitramiya Mutama. It's been respected for thousands of years, east and west, by philosophers. So if you think that there's some past existence, then you should get the knowledge from the best possible source. If you want to learn about mathematics, you get a book of authority. So this is the ultimate authority on this process of reincarnation. This is the authority. So if you're interested, you have to go to the source of information. Anyone can say anything they want, but Krishna consciousness is based on authority, authorized knowledge. There's nothing more authorized. Nothing older, nothing more authoritative. It's all surrendered. Just talking to a devotee or reading a Bhagavad Gita for the first time, even that is a form of surrender. Why? Because the beginning of Krishna consciousness is shraddha, is hearing. If I surrender even one moment of my time to hear a devotee or to read Bhagavad Gita, that's the beginning of surrender. Surrender is a gradual process. It may take many years to surrender. But everything that we do in devotional service, we're reading Prabhupada's books, we're hearing the Shastra, we're developing an attitude of excuse me, service, inquiry, and a relationship with the spiritual master, serving and asking questions. This is all part of the surrendering process. So whether we give up our time, in the beginning we're giving up some time for Krishna, then we might give up more things, we might give up our way of life, our way of looking at the world, live differently, give up eating meat and so on, and give up this and give up that. So these are steps along the path of surrender. So a complete surrender means complete realization that we've attained complete love for Krishna, bhava, prema. So that takes a long time. It's a gradual process, and by following the different methods of devotional service and different practices of surrender that are given in the detail, it's a gradual process. It's all part of the same thing, developing love for Krishna, developing love for the Guru, and developing love for all the great souls and the philosophy. The whole thing is surrender, actually. Everything we do is a surrender process.
I have a question about the seventh canto. There's written chapter 3, verse 21, that every demigod who stays on Brahma Loka, they're going back to the spiritual world at the end of the material existing in this body what they have in this moment. And a few verses later, in verse 35, Srila Prabhupada wrote that demigod on Brahma Loka also dies. So that's something I don't understand.
That you have to show me. I have to see it exactly. But it's possible for a person to go back to the spiritual world in any body. If Krishna ordains it, can have the same form. But the body, any soul which is within the material world, it's consisting of which are, these are the elements. And when, even though that form may stay the same, the body, constituent elements of the body are transformed into Satchitananda, knowledge, bliss, and eternity. So the constituents are changed when one goes back to the spiritual world. So sometimes it happens that one form takes the same look exactly in the spiritual world, but the inside is different, just like Krishna is described as being without veins. So this is up to Krishna ultimately to decide whether one relinquishes the material body and gets a spiritual body which looks completely different, or it can be the same look, the same kind of body. But the subtle body, that is definitely merged. The mind, intelligence, and ego are merged into one spiritual body at the time of death.
One more question. About lusty desires. I'm always praying to Krishna and to Vishnu that I get the power to overcome my lusty desires. Just the only result that I see that I'm getting more and more attacked by Maya. So how it can be possible?
You just have to be patient, because devotional service means being enthusiastic, determined, and patient. Those are the instructions that Rupa Goswami gives. Utsahanishchayatariyat. And it may take a long time. Prabhupada was given the instruction himself, I think it was 1933 if I'm not mistaken, to preach Krishna consciousness in the West. And he didn't come until 1965. He didn't actually start. And sometimes he was asked, why did you take so long? He said, I had to prepare. It was a very big order, a very big task. And even, who was it? Daksha was also asked to, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to progenate the universe as a Prajapati. But Narada Muni came along and stole the sons away, so he couldn't do it. And he was given this order directly. But he was patient. And then ultimately his daughters became the progenitors. So the potency to be Krishna conscious is given in the order of the spiritual master. So it means we have to maintain both our enthusiasm and our determination, but we also have to be patient. We don't know how long it will take to overcome this mind, but we have to be determined to do it. That's the most important thing. We have to keep trying. And in the Nectar of Devotion, it's stated that some of these desires are even in seed form. They're not manifest. We have to even find those desires and then try them. We have to burn them out so that they can't come back and sprout later on and strangle our devotional keeper, come back to haunt us, so to speak. So as I was saying, it's a very difficult desire to overcome. So many examples were given. There was the story of Vilva Mangal Thakur. He also was attached to this prostitute. He left his father's funeral early to go see the prostitute. And then even after he went to her and she told him that you're a fool, you should have this kind of attachment to Krishna, he came to her in a stormy night, risked his life. Then he went to seek a communion with God. He went on a holy tirtha, and still his lust overcame him. That's when he blinded himself. So one has to be determined. I wouldn't recommend blinding, but just be determined. And gradually Krishna will help. As we were reading here, Krishna helps us, actually. But we have to be patient. Follow in the footsteps of the great souls. Avoid bad association. Sangha Chagat Satovrite. And engage in devotional service. Yes?
Did I understand that
Prabhupada
was in Berlin in 1969?
Yes. He was. In September. It was the first place he landed in Europe. Now, I may be wrong about that. Actually, the temple was in Berlin, but I think he went to Hamburg. And Shivananda, who was the... this I'm not certain about. I know he flew from Hamburg, but he may have gone to Berlin first. Shivananda opened this temple in Berlin, and he may have closed it before Prabhupada came, but I remember he told that story, and I thought he said he was in Berlin, but I could have been wrong. It was either Berlin or Hamburg. I should actually check that and see. Maybe it's in the Adilamrita. I think it was in Berlin. I think the temple must have been open because in, I think it was 1972. I know there was a temple there then. Anyway, let's look and see. Any other? Yes.
Maybe can you, please, can you say something about your remembering about Srila Prabhupada?
Can I say something about my remembering about Srila Prabhupada? Well, maybe we should have a separate class for that, or a separate day, because it's a big, big thing. There's a lot to say. Maybe we'll dedicate 1 hour for that. Sometime. Talk about early days of Prabhupada when he came to America. Yes.
Peter, maybe you can say something about your actions, what your service, are you traveling most of the time or
my actions? Yeah. I'm traveling most of the time. I'm developing what we call a communications ministry or program as I travel also. And my main projects are ISKCON World Review. It's a newspaper, maybe you saw. We have ISKCON Communications Briefings, which is talking about better communication with her devotees and outside devotees. That's a publication that comes out every 2 months. And I'm doing some work for the BBT. I've been writing books for the BBT, some books like The Higher Taste. And we're now doing a book on the Krishna consciousness and the environment. It's coming out late this year. And also we just started a new project. It's a video newsreel of Krishna consciousness around the world, 1.5 hour. And maybe one copy will come here before I leave, I don't know. There's the first one is just starting. And part of it is teaching this communications in relation to both within ISKCON and outside. So we have a course at the Vrindavan Institute of Higher Education, or Vaishnava Institute, every year, Kartik, I teach a course. And we have seminars also in different parts of the world as I travel. And we have to set up communications, continental committees in different parts of the world where devotees meet and they discuss how to improve the communications. I don't know if we'll have time. Maybe I could give a short one here just to explain to you what it's all about. So, basically it's traveling and preaching and teaching in specific fields. That's it. Yes.
Yeah, I just think it's great.
The great thing is that we're so lucky to come to Krishna consciousness and to have a spiritual master. We're very lucky, actually, all of us. Krishna's been very kind. When we think how rare it is that we have the opportunity to encounter a devotee, how many millions of people are out there in this world, they have no chance. So, the spirit of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Vishnupada, and all the great devotees is that we want to help all these people. We want to make them fortunate also, because we got the good fortune. So, there's some urgency in the mission to help others. Yes?
Consciousness in preaching, for example, outside the industry, how to find out this consciousness of this person?
That you get by practicing and listening. Shravana Kirtan. The more you approach and hear people, then you can understand more and more the entry level of where the philosophy will enter into their mind. So it just, it takes practice. It takes practice. Well, that's all right, because it's not so much the, you know, we're not going to just measure it on the quality, the quantity of the books, but we want one person to change their life. I mean, we try to do as many as possible, and Prabhupada loved to see millions of books, so book distribution is a very dynamic process. But when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta saw one brahmachari was out all day, we read this in the Lilamrita, and he came back and he only distributed one magazine. But he was out all day trying very hard in the hot sun. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said, "Oh, you're so nice." He was really pleased, genuinely pleased. He wasn't just flattering him. He was very, very pleased that you gave out one magazine. Because he did his best. So we have to just do our best. And then Krishna Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tami says in Bhagavad Gita, if you carry out your devotion to me with love and devotion, with love, I'll give you the intelligence. Krishna says directly, Dadami Buddhi Yoga. I'll give you the mystic intelligence, the mystic power. I'll give it to you. He's guaranteeing us that. So Krishna enlightens us from within and from without also with the spiritual master. He'll give us the intelligence. If Krishna wants him to take the book, he'll take it. And as Prabhupada was speaking in that poem that he wrote when he came over on the boat to America, he said, "I'm just a puppet in your hands. Now make me dance as you like. And if you want them to hear this message, then you can open up their hearts and they will feel enlightened when they hear it." So we have to be dependent on Krishna's mercy. We still try our hardest, but ultimately everything, as we're reading here, it depends on Krishna. He'll give us the understanding. Prabhupada didn't know anything about the West when he came. He said, "When I got off the boat, I didn't know whether to go left or right." He didn't know anything about America. But he just did it. And as we do it, we'll get better and better. Does that help? You don't look very convinced. Okay. Yes.
Can you say something? The soul stays until she accepts another material body.
What happens in between?
From death till something.
It depends on the karmic debt that the soul is carrying. If one's fortunate, it can instantly go to the spiritual world. But from what I understand reading Prabhupada's books, as soon as there is death, there is rebirth. The soul dies. There are exceptions. Sometimes the soul becomes disembodied and takes the form of a spirit without a body. And that may go on for some time. But as soon as there is death, by the higher arrangement of the laws of karma, there's another body waiting somewhere. And it can be any form, any part of the universe, and the soul goes to that place. Of course, we read in the fifth canto how there's a period of suffering sometimes in a hellish condition where one has to circle the globe seven times in hot copper and so on, all that. But from that reading, we understand that that happens in two different time phases. To the conditioned soul, it seems like it takes many thousands of years. But from the perspective of the time of the second birth, it happens instantaneously. So I've discussed this with different devotees. Generally, the process of birth is immediate. There's death and there's birth again, immediately rebirth. Although sometimes the soul is trapped in it, like in a situation of being disembodied. Yes.
Sometimes I think there's a special planet that the soul stays until they can make body, but it's done.
There's a special, I'm sorry.
Planet.
It can happen. There's a Vedic ritual where after a person dies, for 7 days, there's certain chants and mantras that are intoned. And this is to keep the soul from going into a ghostly body, or to hover around the body. There's special mantras for that. Yes?
Do you think this soul after death, after the one dies, this soul is going to the planet? Or?
It can go to another planet. It can.
This is only one dimension where it's going.
One dimension?
One other dimension where some souls, the most of souls, when people die, they are not really healthy anymore. Some are, but the most of are not, so they are not complete anymore. So they get to go to one dimension. The esoteric people call this astral dimension, where there are therapeuts, and they find them, and they put them together, and they do trouble in the end.
That's possible.
Is it true?
Sometimes it happens. Someone can remain in the mental body or the subtle body after death. The mind, intelligence, and ego are disembodied. But that happens sometimes. But the goal of the conditioned soul is to go to Krishna's planet. And that
straight.
Mm-hmm. And that can happen instantaneously, as soon as at the time of death.
Yeah.
That's where we want to go. We'll stop now. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ki Jai.